Hey everybody, welcome back to the Period Chats podcast. I'm your host, Kate Morton. I'm a registered dietitian with a master's degree in human clinical nutrition, and I love talking about periods. And today we're going to be talking about PCOS, or polycystic ovarian syndrome. But before we get into that, we have a little bit of housekeeping. I wanted to update you guys. I'm just going to be posting 2 episodes a month, one solo episode like this one, where we do a quick and dirty deep dive into a hormonal topic, and one guest episode. I love making podcast episodes and I want to stay consistent for you guys. And I was not able to get 4 out a month like I thought, but I'm going to get you 2 really amazing ones a month. So thank you for tuning in, and we're just going to jump right in. So PCOS is one of our most requested topics. If you see me looking away from the screen, if you're watching the video, I'm just checking my notes so I can give you guys all the real research on this. So PCOS is estimated to be in only about 13% of the population. But here's the kicker. They think that up to 70% of people are not diagnosed. So that takes it from 1 in 10 to closer to 1 in 5. Not the best at math, but yeah, I mean, it's a lot more. And when I'm working with clients one-on-one, so often when we get their Dutch test back, we uncover that they have one of the PCOS types. So for polycystic ovarian syndrome, 70% of people do fall under one type, which is the insulin resistant type, which we're going to get into, but there are 4 potential types. It's still a pretty hot topic and debate about the different PCOS types. And the truth is, guys, until we have more research on it, we're not going to fully understand it, but I'm going to walk you through the 4 types that I know I see in my practice and a lot of other practitioners see. But first, what is polycystic ovarian syndrome? So when we're talking about a syndrome, there is a criteria of diagnostics that we have to look at. So there's a mixture of physical symptoms, lab symptoms, imaging. And so when we are looking at PCOS, it's a little bit different for every single person. So that's why it's a little trickier to diagnose, because it's not like, you know, Hashimoto's, where we take a test and we see thyroid antibodies, boom. It's very different. And most syndromes are going to be this way of diagnostics. So the Rotterdam criteria is what people use the most often for diagnosing PCOS. And this includes the presence of irregular menstrual cycles. So they're most of the time happening more than 45 days or less than 21 days. Clinical or biochemical signs of high androgens and high testosterone, and or polycystic ovaries that look like the string of pearls of cysts on your ovaries, and that's done through imaging, like a transvaginal ultrasound. So you have these different criteria, but you do not have to have all 3. You just have to have 2 out of the 3 to be diagnosed with PCOS. I will say this, in my opinion, leaves a lot to be desired when we're talking about the different types of PCOS. But let me give you guys the lab tests that you would most likely go through to get this diagnosis before we get into the 4 different types. So if you assumed you had PCOS, you're having irregular cycles, you're having weight gain, you're struggling with blood sugar control, you have a lot of hair where you don't want it to grow, specifically around the chin, hormonal acne, high cortisol, that is kind of what we're going to start looking at next, is how do we test for those things. So number 1, you are going to look at testosterone levels, your ratio of LH to FSH, and we're also going to look at DHEA. So those are what we're going to look at when we're looking at actual labs. Another lab that I think is really important for looking at, and it falls under like the metabolic panel, would be looking at glucose, hemoglobin A1C, and testing for insulin resistance and different metabolic factors, since we know that insulin resistance is prevalent in 70% of all PCOS cases. So the next thing you would do is an imaging study looking at the ovaries to see if you have those polycystic string of pearl ovaries. And if you're thinking, oh, I've had an ovarian cyst before, that must be me. This is different. So ovarian cysts do happen a lot of times around ovulation, especially during the reproductive years, but PCOS is more cysts, more follicles that are forming in the ovary, and they're actually like immature follicles that are causing lack of ovulation. So that's how the symptoms, that's how we would look and test for it. And if you, the biggest thing I want people to understand about PCOS is that it is not just a reproductive syndrome. It's an entire endocrine syndrome. So I have this awesome chart. I just taught a class at UT. I was a guest speaker on this. And it looks at how PCOS affects the entire body. So we're looking at the reproductive system, but we're also looking at muscle, tissue, your liver, different areas, and like that can be affected by PCOS. So it is not just about the ovary. It is the entire endocrine system that we're looking at for that. So very important to remember that. So PCOS, there's a couple different ways to talk about it. When you're talking about the types, when a more like Western traditional medical setting. So if you're going talking to OBGYN, your gyno, you might hear things like classic PCOS, which is all three of those Rotterdam criteria where you're having the polycystic ovaries, we're seeing high androgens, and then we're also seeing irregular menstrual cycles. Non-classic PCOS, you might have one or two, but not all three of these. But we're going to get into more of a functional approach to looking at PCOS. So when I'm working with clients, and I've learned this from other practitioners in my space, there are four different ways we can look at it. The first three are pretty well supported by research. The fourth one is still growing and we're working on supporting that. So insulin resistant PCOS. And when we talk about the functional approaches of PCOS, it's a lot more like looking at, okay, what is the root of what we're trying to help and support for PCOS? So when we're looking at someone who insulin resistance is the main driver of their PCOS, this is about 70% of cases, it's estimated. And I would say majority of people I see is this, is that classic insulin resistant PCOS. So they come in and we really work on blood sugar balance. And this can be done a few different ways. So we look at fat, fiber, protein, making sure we're increasing our protein, making sure we're building muscle. I think this is a very underrated approach for blood sugar balance, is focusing on weightlifting, Pilates, lower intensity activities that are really building muscle. But then on top of that, we are layering in some cardio, because we don't need to be completely scared of cardio, but we need to be smart with how we're doing our cardio. It's not all cycle long. It's at distinct times, specifically when we're looking at that more follicular phase time. But we're really focusing on strength training. Swimming is another one I love for looking at insulin resistance PCOS. Anything that's going to build muscle and help us really utilize a lot of that insulin that we have in the body. Aside from focusing on blood sugar balance and also focusing on building muscle, we're going to reduce stress. And the reduction of stress and blood sugar balance are going to be a huge theme of this episode. They are probably the two biggest tips I can give you guys if you're listening with PCOS. So reducing stress, because we don't want cortisol to constantly be high. That also impacts our blood sugar. So not having caffeine on an empty stomach, reducing our stress. Both are physiological stressors, like people in our lives, things that stress out our job, learning breathing techniques, meditation, but then also internal stressors like going too long without eating, allowing the blood sugar to become imbalanced, or pumping up our cortisol with caffeine on an empty stomach. On the flip side of that, not sleeping enough can raise cortisol. So all things we're taking into consideration for the insulin resistance PCOS type. The next thing is supplementation. I think that there is a time and a place for supplementation. And for this one, magnesium and inositol. I can never say this correctly, but it is I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. Those seem to be the two most effective supplements when I'm working with different clients when it's coming to really focusing on blood sugar balance. Another one, if you're experiencing slightly elevated cholesterol, and always talk to your doctor. Remember, this is just, I'm just sharing my practical clinical experience, not giving you direct medical advice, people. Talk to your doctor. But the other one is berberine. I have also seen berberine be helpful in these cases if we're dealing with a little bit of elevated cholesterol. So That's our insulin resistant PCOS type. The next is the adrenal PCOS type, which I find this PCOS type very interesting when they are coming in and we are working on their Dutch test, because sometimes testosterone is elevated, but not always. But DHEA is always through the roof, and they're usually metabolizing it in a really inefficient way. And so that's what we're working on, is increasing that metabolism, but also reducing stress. So this is going to be the key for this PCOS type. Again, we're still focusing on blood sugar balance, because blood sugar imbalance is a stressor on the body. But here we are really, really focusing on changing those stressful lifestyle situations. Also loving low impact, high strength workouts for this type of PCOS. Supplementation is a little bit different in this type though. So when I'm looking at supplementing here, I really look at magnesium again, but then also a vitamin C and possibly an ashwagandha. So this can really, really help in these times to calm the nervous system. So that's the adrenal PCOS. But blood sugar balance is still important here. Really great low intensity weightlifting activities, still important here. But we're having a bigger emphasis on reducing stress, and our supplementation approach is more focused on the adrenal system and reducing stress. Sleep, again, going to be very, very important here. And if you're struggling with insomnia, we can work on upping protein before bed to see if that can help to get cortisol down and help you have a good night's sleep. Sleepy girl mocktail, which is like the tart cherry juice, magnesium can be really great. Incorporating things like herbal teas to help. But that's going to be that type of PCOS. And it's interesting because in this type of PCOS, I have seen cases where DHEA is actually high, but testosterone's just right under high, like it's not quite high yet. So that's another interesting thing I've seen working with Dutch testing and labs for this. The next type is chronic inflammation PCOS. So when we are talking about inflammation here, the first thing I'm going to do is look at gut health. And gut health is important for all of these conversations, but with the chronic inflammation, we are seeing high testosterone and elevated C-reactive proteins. We need to see what's going on and what's causing the inflammation. I find a lot of times it has something to do with gut health, whether it's gut lining being damaged, having a food intolerance that they may not be aware of, having extreme constipation can happen here, small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, a gut infection like parasite, or there's so many different ones that you could have, but that's the first one that comes to mind, or just even overgrowth of our bad bacteria and not enough of the good bacteria in our gut. So with that, I'm going to be looking at gut health, and we're going to be starting there versus starting on some of the other more like quote unquote hormonal protocols. Going to be starting with gut health, and we're going to be looking to get that inflammation under control. Blood sugar balance, still important here. We're still going to want to incorporate movement, but we're going to be focusing on that gut health first. So yeah, that's like a huge one. And it's really interesting when we start the gut journey, because I, even like in my early days as a dietitian, still viewed each system of the body as very individual. And the thing is, they're just not. Like, they holistically work together. And if something is going on in the gut, if we've got a lot of inflammation, that's the first place I'm going to look. And it's amazing when we get the gut under control, hormones actually really start to fall more in line. Because what a lot of people don't realize, and I didn't realize for a really long time, was having high estrogen, excess estrogen, can sometimes be linked to being constipated because we're not excreting our estrogen properly through the GI tract. So that's one other amazing thing. The fourth type of PCOS is, I would say, a little bit more debated, and I'm even having a harder time like pulling resources and research, but I do see it like when I look at labs, is when you're coming off of birth control called post-pill PCOS. Some theories on this, I've listened to a few doctors give talks on this, saying that it could be from the progesterone that's given most, a lot of the progesterone or progesterone-based birth controls. Progesterone-based birth controls, so not real progesterone, can cause a little bit of havoc on the ovaries when you're coming off of it. So when I see this, so this is usually why I don't do Dutch testing right when someone comes off of birth control, but if they really want to do it, or they've done it with somebody else and then they come to me and we retest in 6 months, really like focusing on detox pathways, like sweating, drinking a lot of water, making sure you're going to the bathroom every day. And when I say like going to the bathroom every day, I mean like your poop is satisfying. And that's like the everyone always like cringes when I say that, but like you go to the bathroom and you're like, wow, that was great. That is what we want to aim for every day when we're talking about like our detox pathways, but then also sweating. So sauna, movement can be helpful. And then we also want to replenish any nutrients that may have been lost while we're on the pill. Vitamin C, magnesium, vitamin E, folate, calcium, all things we want to think about. But then we also want to support gut health. And so as long as you're not having any, crazy gut symptoms, if you are, then we're going to start there. We want to build up good bacteria in the gut, focus on getting at least 25, 35 grams of fiber every day, and prebiotic fiber, probiotic fiber, or prebiotic fiber and getting probiotic foods into your diet. So that's going to be for like the post-birth control PCOS type. I would say with a lot of my clients, I see this level out 6 months to a year. This is why I always recommend if you are wanting to get pregnant to come off the pill a whole year before and spend the year, that year kind of getting your nutrition in order, your cycle back in sync, just because overall I do see that it takes 6 months to a year. So those are the more functional types of PCOS, and I have seen other practitioners talk about these, learned about these through other practitioners, and this has been very, very helpful for my practice, like working with clients. Because if you're just going off like Rotterdam criteria and trying to treat everyone the same, I find that it's just not as good of results when we're kind of digging in here, looking at insulin resistance type, adrenal type, inflammation type, post-pill type. It allows us to dial in a little bit deeper. Because the other thing is PCOS, a lot of people assume weight gain is always going to be a part of PCOS, but there is something that they call lean type PCOS, where that's the exact opposite case. So all that to say, there is a lot of different types of PCOS. And so it's important to know which type we're working with and that you might have. And then we can have an approach based on that. So that's on the types of PCOS. But I did want to go into just some general guidelines for PCOS because I just think it's helpful to think about. And so one, we know diet and lifestyle play a huge role in PCOS, and this is one of the most daunting things and exciting things when I talk to clients, because it's like, oh my gosh, do I have to change all these things? Do I have to do all this stuff? But then the great thing is once we get a routine that's really good for you, then you get to feel better, and it's amazing. So, and that's one thing research has shown us time and time again, that we can do a lot with diet and PCOS. Seed cycling, for example, one of my favorite tools for PCOS. And actually now we have three peer-reviewed research articles on the benefits of PCOS and seed cycling. There's even more research articles on flaxseed and PCOS. So that's a like great tool for PCOS and another exciting area of research. Strategies for managing insulin resistance. This is probably the biggest question I get because this really is relevant for all the PCOS types, because I do usually see some level of insulin resistance in all the types. It just might not be the main thing we're working on. So we want to focus on stabilizing the blood sugar. And what this means is really, I don't encourage people to count really micros or macros or any of it. I just think when we get to counting, it gets to be borderline obsession. And then that might be creating stress around food. For example, you guys know I have been going through it with my own gut health. Had a colonoscopy last week. When I was like having to check everything religiously, like I just felt myself spiraling back into that obsessive compulsive around food. So I don't want that. So what I want people to think about when they're thinking about blood sugar balance, one, no caffeine on an empty stomach. Two, consider a good night's sleep a piece of blood sugar balance. But three, Fat, fiber, protein. So do you have protein on your plate, a little bit of fat, and good fiber? So that's what we're going to think. So protein, that would be like chicken, tofu, lentils, any kind of beef, meat, plant-based proteins. A good fat would be like some good grass-fed butter, or do you have avocado or nuts and seeds? That's another great one. And then fiber would be like a whole grain, quinoa, rice. You have veggies, you have fruit. Are we kind of having all of those things on our plate at one time? Oh, but what else? I got on a little side tangent on that. So what I was saying was when I was getting really obsessed with food, my Oura Ring would tell me when I was stressed, and I was having a spike of stress every single mealtime. And then that's not good for my insulin resistance or my insulin and blood sugar balance because I'm creating stress right before I'm eating. So the sweet spot is thinking about blood sugar balance as a friendly, like, plate building activity versus this very stressful, overwhelming thing. The next thing is we really want to focus on fiber as well. So we want to have those regular bowel movements. We want to be supporting our body with fiber because that's going to be very helpful all the way around. And fresh fruits and veggies, amazing. I have heard people come, like, I have clients who come to me and been like, "My last dietitian said I can't have fruit because I have PCOS." Guys, no. You can totally have fruit. Like, fruit is so good for you and it has so much good fiber in it. If you're experiencing a lot of GI issues around fruit, that's something we can totally talk about, or you can talk about with your healthcare provider. But if you're not, fruit is great and fruit is so good for you. And if you think about fruit from a blood sugar perspective, like, everyone's like, "Oh, juice spikes your blood sugar." Yes, this is true. But fruit has water and it has fiber in it. So, like, the water fiber content compared to the sugar content helps to keep the blood sugar balanced. And if you are worried about that, you can just pair it with, like, fruit and cheese. That's like a great example of getting a little bit of fat and protein, getting a little bit of fiber. Okay. Omega-3 fatty acid supplementation is also something that has been seen to be helpful across the board if you have PCOS. So that can help to reduce androgen levels. Inositol, which I already told you about and I can't say, has been shown to increase insulin sensitivity, which then helps to improve ovarian function and ovulation. Because really, that's what's happening because of high androgens, because of unstable blood sugar, high cortisol. High testosterone is a result of all of those things. The ovaries aren't ovulating, so that's what's causing the irregular cycles. Vitamin D. So vitamin D deficiency has also been seen to be common if you have PCOS. So knowing if you have a low vitamin D, you can do a test like through, Let's Get Checked or Everlywell, but you can also do it through your doctor and it's very affordable. So I always encourage checking vitamin D levels because they're low in most of my PCOS clients. And then chromium. So this is one that's been shown to help with glucose and insulin sensitivity. This is one just be careful with. Get it from food. I wouldn't necessarily say you need to, like, take a supplement for it. We just want to be getting it through food. And then we alternative therapies. So this is seed cycling would be considered under this category. And these are alternative therapies that have research behind them. So seed cycling, if you've never heard of seed cycling and you're new to this podcast, it's from the first day of your period till you ovulate. You have ground pumpkin and flax seeds, 1 tablespoon of each. And then after ovulation to your next period, 1 tablespoon of sesame seeds and 1 tablespoon of sunflower seeds, ground organic. Plunkett Wellness, which is my company, makes really amazing organic seed cycling kits that get delivered right to your door. But you can totally do it yourself. It's kind of a pain. I used to do it by myself. It's obviously why I started Plunkett. But if you want the convenience option, Plunkett. If you want to do it yourself, go for it. You do you. But also, if you have an irregular cycle, you can seed cycle with the moon. So from the new moon to the full moon is going to be pumpkin and flax. Full moon to new moon, sesame and sunflower. If your cycle is less than 45 days and you're tracking consistent ovulation, I do recommend using your ovulatory cycle for seed cycling, just extending those days out. So if your luteal phase is 20 days, having sesame and sunflower that whole time. If your follicular phase is 20 days, sesame and sunflower that whole time. So that's just, like, easy numbers for an example. Another alternative therapy that's been shown to be supportive for PCOS is spearmint tea. So they found that women who drank 2 cups of spearmint tea, and not just any mint tea, they did organic spearmint tea, had lower androgen levels. And that was actually done, that study was done in 2010. So it's been around a while. So that's another way to help reduce testosterone and androgen levels if you've been told those are high. And I love adding in the alternative therapies too, because we talk a lot about supplementation and, you know, resistance training is another therapy that's been shown time and time again to really, really help with insulin sensitivity if you have PCOS. And the last thing I'm going to tell you guys is there's research that stress management and mindfulness also supports PCOS. And I'm just going to be real with you. This is what I struggle with the most, because I love to be busy and I love to chronically overwhelm myself because it just probably makes me feel important. And that's me being super vulnerable with you guys. And I'm really working on saying no and not overwhelming my schedule and just letting myself be. And because, you know, I've been dealing with high cortisol, which has been, and blood sugar irregularities. So this stress and mindfulness piece is amazing. So they found in 8 weeks, if you did one mindfulness activity a day, it helped to reduce blood pressure and it also helped PCOS symptoms. So 5 minutes a day, maybe. Some examples of this is going outside and putting your feet in the grass, like leaving, not having your phone, kind of just taking a break. This could be a meditation, 5 minutes of yoga or stretching, a 5 minute walk. If you are focusing on cortisol, you could do a 5 minute outside in the morning, look at the sky, not the direct sunlight as the sun's rising, and then do the same thing as the sun is setting. So yeah. And then also another thing they found with PCOS, and it's like when you're dealing with any lifelong syndrome or something you're working on with your health, it can just be overwhelming. So I think that, you know, I have Hashimoto's, it's frustrating, and I totally hear you guys that it can really be frustrating. And so I think that's also where this mindfulness comes in, is just taking a minute to de-stress. Life is stressful too. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. This is like my big download dump on PCOS. If you're listening on Spotify, you can ask questions, you can submit comments. If you guys have more questions, you can find me, Carbs and Kate, on Instagram. If you want a seed cycle, Funky Wellness, we have a 20% off code. It's just period chats. You can get 20% off the whole website. So yeah, I would just love to hear from you guys. I really appreciate you listening. And then, you know, the best way for more people to hear this podcast is if you can share it with a friend or leave a rating or review. It helps more people see us. And it also helps me know if you guys are liking this content or not. I'm really grateful I have the opportunity to put it out for you. And I just want to make sure I'm just really giving you guys what you want. So thank you for listening. Next week, there will not be an episode, but the next week there will, and it will be a guest episode. So tune in, and you guys just have the best evening.